happy Monday night. Today is September 18th, 2023. We are across the pitch. We are going a little old school today, as it's just Dave and I, the original duo, back at you in the camera. Jose is away for father duties and taking care of what he's got to take care of at home. But Dave, you're joining me tonight. How are you doing today, buddy?
No, I mean, I'm good. I mean, got the Monday Night Football doubleheader on in the background. So, I mean, you know, exhilarating as that is. But, I mean, again, we're here to talk some Union. Whether it will be positive or not, is make sure you're tuning. So I think, yeah, we're coming off a very, very disappointing weekend considering the circumstances.
Yeah, you know, I usually wear Union gear on the show. I don't think I've ever not worn something Union-related. And I said, I'm not in the mood today. I'm really not in the mood today to wear anything Union after Saturday's performance. The Sixers just signed Oubre from Charlotte. So I was like, you know, I'm going to go old-school Sixers. I just asked Dave this. If anybody can guess what shirt I'm wearing. And I also got my little Star Wars bobblehead here. If anybody can guess what Sixers shirt I'm wearing, I'd be happy and impressed by your knowledge going back several years here. So
there's
anyway.
There's no chance anyone's going to get that. Who's on the back of your Sixers jersey? Sixers t-shirt.
I loved him, by the way. I did. I loved him. So anyway, on Saturday night, we had a Union game. It was probably the result most of us thought of before the game started. But it was not exactly how we wanted to get there. And Valerie says, dang, no Union gear on set. I know. I do have, Valerie, though, a bear that I bought for my daughter, a little Union bear. So I'm not completely off of it. You get this at Rally House pretty cheap, like $12. So I'm not completely off the team, drinking out of my mug. I can't escape it. It's part of my life. But I have to. I can't wear it tonight. But anyway, 2-2 result. Now, Dave, just initial reactions from the Saturday performance. What were your reactions from the result, but how we got the result as well?
Frustration more than anything. I think up until the first goal, I think Union were pretty comfortable. Don't really think Cincinnati actually created much. And, you know, the first goal coming the way to be honest, it's so hard. It's like the one thing I've etched in my brain isn't, no, the Gazdag penalty or the opening Union goal is the first goal for Cincinnati, which really just is etched in my brain. It's the fact that, you know, you play a back three, and the whole point of back three is you've got three players there. It's like the center, perimeter center is covered, it's solidified, and you have two Cincinnati players walk through the center, that central area of your back three, and just then having a two, how through one through ball from about 40 yards out, can you have a 2-on-1 with Andre Blake? It just, I think, again, I'm so frustrated with the way that the game ended. And again, like, Jack Elliott's red card was just stupid. The goal was in the 50th minute. It's up until the first Cincinnati goal. I think Union were quite comfortable, but it was just such a frustrating way to concede. Like, both goals were just terrible goals. I mean, I've even forgotten the fact that Jose Martinez actually scored a goal.
It got overshadowed by all the negative parts of the second half, but go ahead.
That's what I mean. I think you look at it on the face of it, you think Union drew 2-2 at home to Cincinnati. Both teams had 10 men. You thought, the Union typically do struggle. But then you look at the context of the game. It's like the Union were 2-0 up, cruising, not really under any pressure. And Cincinnati came out second half, got the early goal, which again has been a really, really common trend of Union games of late as well. Slow starts in the second half, whether it's conceding the goal early or, you know, just not getting out of the blocks and the opposition team just completely dominating, like, the half. It's been such a common trend of late, and it's just as we keep saying, as you get to the playoffs, that's when you want to hit your top form. That's when you want to start, you know, picking up not just points, getting points on the board, but also star points as well. You know, starting to really get those performances ticking up and playing at your best. But for the Union, since the League's Cup, there's been noticeable issues that have continued and trends that have continued. You know, from the Tijuana game, the slow starts in the second half, to the back three and defense being a massive issue. You know, just it's so leaky. It's so like it's just being carved open with ease. Like, you go to a back four, you think try and go for it with your man advantage, and within about 10 seconds of going to a back four, you get a man sent off. Like, yeah, it was just a shambles all around that second half.
I think the problem that I'm facing is, the Union just have to be honest with themselves now. I think all season long we've kind of said this team should be really good. They have the players to be really good. But I think we're just seeing that they're really not that good. Like, the Union are a middle-of-the-pack Eastern Conference team. which is weird for me to say because I also think we can beat anybody in the East. And maybe that says more about the Eastern Conference than it does about the Union. Like, for example, Orlando City, right? We played them twice when we had international duty. We know we can take care of the Revs. We've beaten, you know, the likes of DC, which are on the borderline of the playoffs picture. We've done fine against Charlotte before.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid of Cincinnati, but I think we can at least go toe-to-toe with them. I just think that as the season's going on, we're waiting for them to wake up, and they're just not waking up. And a lot of times you hear coaches, not even just Jim, I mean just in general, say, we had an uncharacteristic performance. This is not how we typically play. This is not our mentality, whatever you want to call it. I think this is their characteristic. Their characteristic is a team that will be very hot and cold. They will have performances and games where you're like, wow, that actually wasn't too bad of a game. And then you'll have games like the Toronto match where they look absolutely terrible. Or even if you want to go back to the beginning of the season with Montreal, remember how they hadn't scored on anybody for X amount of games or whatever it was? And then we go down to Montreal or go up to Montreal and we fall flat on our face. And if you even look at the recent games, Dave, like if you look at the wins that we've had, I'm going all the way back till July 12th. So we beat Nashville. I think all of us agree that Joe Bendick must have had said some sort of prayer before that game because
that was
the reason why we should have won that game.
Oh, yeah, that was
it was terrible. Then I mean, you beat NYCFC 2-1. That was a solid game, and that's the momentum you had going into the Leagues Cup. You said, "Okay, wow, we just beat NYCFC. We're feeling good going to Leagues Cup." But we didn't exactly play well in Leagues Cup. I mean, yeah, you beat 2-1 in Querétaro. Not exactly something to be super proud of, right? They're just Liga MX teams traveling to Philly. You didn't look good against Red Bulls. You didn't look good against DC United. You got embarrassed by Miami. You beat Monterrey's B squad. The Red Bulls game that we won 4-1, that's great, but they also had a red card.
Yeah, I mean, just before that game, they lost 3-1 in Toronto. Toronto's first win, not 12 games.
So I'm looking back now, even before July, you had the Galaxy disaster. You had the embarrassment against Atlanta. The last strong performance where they absolutely dominated from beginning to end was the Miami match on June 24th.
Yeah.
When they beat up a shitty Miami team that had none of their stars yet, and they were just in shambles entering Leagues Cup. So you're going back, what, July, August, almost 3 months now that we've actually seen a high-quality game of soccer. So Valerie says, everyone on the team is very good. Who are the great players? Who among them is the best MLS? I'd say Martinez. I'd say Andre Blake. And then after that, I mean, we know Gazlag is very good. Is he the best 10 in MLS? No. I mean, you can argue Kai Wagner is the best left back, right? So you have three players the best at their position. But Jacob Glesnes has played so-so at times. We saw him play great, and then we also saw him play very poorly against DC United. So I just don't think this team is as good as everybody thinks they are, and this is the reality we have to now accept. Now, does that mean we're going to have a long playoff push? Probably not. And that's going to have to be what is going to have to be. That's it. Dave, I mean, do you think I'm over-exaggerating, or do you think there's some merit to the just not that good?
I don't know. It's a tough one. I think but the annoying thing is perhaps the not that good claim. It's just we've seen them be great. Like last year, they were the best team in the MLS over the course of the regular season. I don't care that, you know, LAFC won more games and the Union had the better goal difference, lost less games, accumulated the same amount of points, and you know, they were beating teams 5-0, 6-0, 7-0 on a weekly basis. We've seen that this team can do that. And again, as we have alluded to so often this season, they've kept a lot of the roster. And again, is the lack of changes within the team or the lack of an upgrade perhaps the reason why that's happened? But perhaps the team has tailed off a bit, maybe. Who knows? Maybe the team's peaked and we're all sort of refusing to realise it. But again, like we've seen Jacob Glesnes reigning the MLS Defender of the Year. We know how good he is. Has, again, as you said, been so sad that she's had some very poor performances. Jack Elliott's had, like, in comparison to the standards that Jack Elliott has set for this team, he's fallen off a cliff this year. Like, Damien Lowe, again, another very, very capable and at times reliable centre-half. He struggled since, you know, coming back in and joined the League's Cup. He's been a focal point of some of the issues when playing with the back three.
I mean, let's talk about Lowe. You want to talk about Lowe. The two goals we saw against Cincinnati can both fall on Lowe to some extent, right?
Lowe and Elliott, I think.
And Carranza. If you look at the first goal, you have, I think it was Vasquez, who gets the ball. Elliott is in somewhat of a position to defend him. But Lowe comes out of nowhere, completely leaves Kai on an island with I can't remember the guy's name right now. And it was such a poor miscommunication between those two teams. And then you see Carranza's, like, you know, shitty pass to Harriel. Lowe kind of falls asleep and lets Vasquez run behind him.
Yeah.
So he's – and it's not the only two goals he's been the reason why they've scored on us. You can probably count another four or five this season where you see how Damian probably could have played better. Look at the Miami game, for example. He played awful against Miami. Yeah. So – but go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off. Just no, Damian fine. Lowe's
– yeah, like Lowe's been so-so this year. Again, he's been great at times. But again, he's been so-so that back – playing with the back three. We've talked about how great the back three has been. But defensively, typically, when playing with the back three, you should be more solid. You've got more defenders in there. You're a bit more compact. The Union look less compact. They looks the games are more stretched. Again, like,
yeah.
Sorry, just got off a bit of tangent. But again, Jim prides himself and he always says his team isn't built for games where it's stretched. The games are so stretched at the moment. So end to end, the games are so stretched. The back five is, is just all a calamity all over the place. But again, it's just so strange. It's said for the first, like for the second goal as well. Like, where are people busting their gut to get back and try and rectify the mistake? Carranza gives the ball away and stands there. Then Harriel just watches the ball go past him and just stands there. And they just watch. I think I'm trying to think who set up Vasquez for the goal, but they just literally watched. I'm trying to think of his name now. Whoever set up Vasquez for the goal.
Coda or whatever.
I think it was been Kubo, yes. Or yeah, Kubo. And in fact, Kubo set up the what's it called? Kubo set up the first goal, I believe. But then I think whoever put the ball in for the might have been Kubo actually, but whoever put the ball in for the second goal in this everyone just watched him run into the box and then the Union again was stretched and Vasquez give him a chance and he'll take it.
Yeah, he didn't need much of a chance. He didn't get a really good shot on that ball. It just kind of chipped over. Lowe actually got a foot on it.
Yeah.
Barely, and it kind of chips over Blake. But I think on top, not even just the fact that they're having these mental miscues, is that they just don't have it in them to finish off these games. And if you want to look at the season two compared to last season, last year we didn't have as many games. So you just wonder if this is they just don't have it in them right now. They had a long season last year that went obviously to the MLS Cup. You've been playing more games already than did all of 2022. I just don't know if they have the energy to finish these games off. Because when that halftime whistle blew, I was very happy. I was like, this is going to be the best win of the year. Easily.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. It's going to be 2-0. Maybe you win 2-1 or 3-1, whatever. And I remember what Kai Wagner said after the Red Bulls match where they beat him 4-1. He said that was the best win of the season. I said, no, this is going to be the best win of the season. Because even if Cincinnati was missing Acosta, they still are extremely deep. They are still very talented. They're still the best team in MLS who play you pretty damn good, too, on top of that. And as soon as that first goal went in what was it, the 49th, 50th minute, I said, well, that's it. I mean, they just don't have it in them. The Cincinnati had scored shortly after, but it was ruled offside. So the Union were just, they fell asleep. That's it. They just fell asleep, and it was so frustrating. Now, Dave, I think, did you had mentioned that they were going to win, or did you say they were going to draw?
I think I said 1-0 draw.
Okay, I'm trying to find that paper that we wrote where we had put all those numbers down. I freaking lost it prior since the last time I wrote them down. I thought draw, too. I didn't think they were going to beat them, but now it's obviously more disappointing. But the bigger issue now is going to Cincinnati, or going to Charlotte, rather. We go there on Wednesday night. We don't know yet where Jose Martinez stands. Right,
yeah,
Dave did injured. Say it was 1-1. So you did call a draw, Dave. So there you go.
That's right.
So you're going to Charlotte. You don't have Jose Martinez. He did have a back injury. Maybe he comes back. It depends on what Jim Curtin says in the press conference. Which means you're going to have to rely on Bueno. I know Bedoya is back after the suspension. So what are your feelings now going into Charlotte? And how do you think this lineup is going to look against Charlotte, knowing we have LAFC again on Saturday?
Charlotte game, I think, had the Union won at the weekend, I think for Charlotte game, they could have perhaps been a bit more experimental and changed things around. But now you're coming off another draw, you're fourth in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
Ideally, as we keep saying, you want to claim that second place and, you know, try and hope that, you know, the common trend of the first seed get in the East, getting eliminated in the first round or second round, which then gives you the home playoff advantage. That's where you want to be. You want to be in that second seed. And of course, Miami have I think, are playing as well, which will be interesting and could be an opponent for the Union late in the stretch. But I think Jim's going to have to go with the full-strength team now that he has available to him. So I imagine Bedoya will play. I imagine he'll probably stick with the back five.
Do you really think he goes back five again? Because even in the presser, he said the formation can work. It just seems to be kind of on a funk right now. Or do you think they go four in the back?
Well, they might go four. Actually, obviously, Bedoya's back, isn't it? So maybe they might go with the four in the back. Obviously, they'll have to, wouldn't they? Because Jack Elliott's suspended, so they'd have to go to a four in the back because Elliott's obviously out with suspension with the red card that he picked up. So yeah, I imagine Jim will go strongest possible starting 11, really, because they haven't got any other options. But again, that comes with perhaps a reluctance to rotate the squad earlier in the season, which might be a cause for the injuries and stuff being picked up now. Could be a cause perhaps for the leggy performances and the struggles that the team has suffered.
If you look at the table right now, there's two things to keep in mind here. So for one, the Union are in fourth place, like you mentioned. Cincinnati has 58, Orlando has 50, New England has 48, the Union have 47. The biggest thing for us right here is the fact that Charlotte sits in 11th spot. They are 32 points. They are 3 points behind DC United for the ninth and final playoff spot. DC United on Wednesday also play, and they host Atlanta, who have won three out of the last five games. They drew two matches ago. They've only lost one last five. So Atlanta's playing pretty decently. They get to go to DC United and face off against them. So if you're looking at it from Charlotte perspective, you're thinking the Union are coming to us. They're not playing that well. Even if we hold them to a draw, there is a good chance that Atlanta pulls off the win and we still continue to climb inch by inch. I mean, I'm not going into Charlotte feeling confident at all, in my opinion. We saw what happened last year. We had the better team last year, and we got embarrassed last year in Charlotte. So, if you look at the lineup in terms of the formation, you're probably going to go Olivier, Glesnes, Lowe, Kai, Bedoya, McGlynn, Bueno, Gosdag. Now, the question is up top. Do you try to give Baribo a start and save Ua and Carranza for LAFC?
Could see Baribo starting, maybe. I think probably it could be a Baribo and Carranza starting two up front, and maybe, as you said, Ua. But again, perhaps, with this team playing, again, back-to-back games, you're playing on the road. Maybe you would imagine that since Charlotte would dominate possession, they'll have plenty of the ball in comparison to the Union.
So look at the last.
Maybe they go for a bit more pace and height in attack. Of course, I mean, Carranza's obviously quite a tall player, but he's not as quick as Baribo or Mikel Ua. And they're both, obviously, I think Ua and Baribo are both probably around 6 foot plus. So again, perhaps they might go with the height and, the height and pace combination of the two and try and catch them on the break with long balls forward, balls down the channel, and with a bit of height to contest with the centre arse, maybe, unless Jim really blows things up and goes with the Christmas tree or something.
I really hope not. And by the way, Pat Bernard from Edge of Philly Sports says, "What's up, guys? Appreciate it." It was good seeing you, by the way, Saturday, Pat. And he says, "What's the excuse for the Union taking their foot off the gas on Saturday? Cincinnati didn't have their best player." Listen, Pat, you're preaching to the choir because they've been doing this all season long. Listen, we were joking around last week. Jillian Almany from the one team we agree on had said we have to throttle them, right? The problem is the Union don't know how to throttle anybody. And that's going to go to a Sixers point, Dave. I'll bring up the Sixers point in a minute. Yeah, no, we're going to bring up a Sixers point here. James says, "I'm new here." James, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. So the taking the foot off the gas, killer mentality, reminds me of the Sixers with Brett Brown. So I know, Dave, you were probably just starting to watch the Sixers at that time. I know you had mentioned, by the way, for those people who don't know yet what Sixers jersey I'm wearing, you better keep guessing because I'm waiting for somebody to step up who knows the Sixers as well as I do. So they would get these leads late in games, and they would blow them constantly. Same with Doc Rivers. You would get these leads, and you would blow them constantly. And you were talking about like 25-point leads, 20-point leads. And they just could not close it out. And people had said the Philadelphia 76ers were so used to losing all the time. They were so used to just choking games away on purpose. They did not have a winning mentality. So those players who kind of transitioned out of the process just couldn't lead a team to the finish line. Same with Brett Brown. He didn't know how to lead a team to the finish line because he never had to lead a team to the finish line. They just stopped at the three-quarter pole. Do you think the Union have the same issue? Do you think they're just not programmed to win? Because it seems like anytime there's a chance to put the gas, the foot on the pedal, they just can't. They can't do it.
Yeah. Again, I think, as we've seen, like, perhaps maybe not so much of the Sixers level of being to close out games in the regular season because we've seen them do it. Perhaps the big game mentality is not there in comparison to other teams. Like, as you've mentioned throughout the years, I mean, the US Open Cup defeats under Jim, winning the Support Shield and then shit in the bed in their first game, losing, I think, was it 2-0 at home to the Revs after beating them like five times in the same season.
Yeah, it was the Support Shield year. Yep,
the Support Shield year. The CCL game where I know against Club America, where I know, of course, Club America are a much better team than the Union. But you know, you're 2-0. Just moments in the games where the Union switch off and I'll lead to the MLS Cup game in a minute. But yep. You know, 1-0. You know, the tie is very much in your hands and within grasp, and you can see, you know, you're somewhat half in the game at 1-0 in Mexico, and Jose Martinez loses the ball, tries to do something fancy in the penalty area, and then gets reckless and gives away a stupid penalty to make it 2-0 to Club America, and then in the reverse leg, missing that, dominating the game pretty much from minute one to about an hour, and then Jermaine Montero missing the penalty, and the tie just switched like that, and Club America just sort of ran away with it. Even that playoff game that same year, you know, Union won the lap, conceded within about 30 seconds ago and won the lap against NYCFC in the Eastern Conference final. And then the horrible late goal they conceded and then just the cup final last year where...
But hold on, go ahead. Finish up real quick. Go ahead.
So, and then obviously last year with Jack Elliott being caught flat-footed and bailed out, jumping him to smash a header, smash his header in the fifth minute of stoppage time.
And that was right after Olivier's poor clearance on the ball that led to the throw-in from LAFC that led to that. So the point I made earlier, and exactly what you said now, Jim Curtin says it is uncharacteristic for the Union to play like X, to have these mental miscues. Based off your brief synopsis of the last 4 years, it's not uncharacteristic for them to do that. That is typically what the Union do. That's why we say that's so Union, because that's all they know how to do. Unfortunately, that's how Curtin has been since his eighth. He's been here 8 years now coaching, right? 7 years, 8 years. He's had these uncharacteristic moments happen a lot over his tenure, and the Union players have had these moments happen a lot over the past couple of years. And that's where it gets frustrating for me. Where, to Pat's point, why'd they take their foot off the gas? Because I don't think they know how to keep it down. That's the reality of it. I mean, yeah, you can look back on last year where they beat up on a really bad DC United team, but now, in hindsight, that's not really anything to brag about. So let's look at Charlotte, though, because Charlotte hasn't been playing too badly. The last game, Charlotte was 0-0 at home against DC United. They drew against Nashville 1-1 on September 2nd. If you go back to August, they beat LAFC at home, and they drew against Orlando. So if you look at the last five games between these two clubs, let's see here. I'm trying to see. You have, what, two draws, three draws. Three draws and a win for Charlotte over the last four games. So not only they're in bad form. If you look at the goal differentials between these two clubs, you have total goals. The Union outscore them 49-34. That's crazy. The goal differential is 16 for the Union, minus 9 for Charlotte. So they give up a lot of goals. They've given up 43 goals this year, and they've only scored 34, while the Union have allowed 33. Now, typically, you'd say, wow, the Union clearly have an advantage because they can score goals and they can play defense, while Charlotte is the reverse. They can't score and they can't play D. But does that make you feel any better at all with Wednesday? Because it doesn't for me.
That's the thing, though, isn't it? Like, on paper, this Union team is, again, but like we saw it last year, the highest scorers and the best defense in the league. I think at one point they were on course to have the best defense in MLS history. I don't know if they ever got there or not. But like...
Yeah, I think they were tied with differential.
They were up there, but I just, as you sort of said, like on paper they should, but again, the Union this season have proven in games where they should be like have the dominance and be in charge, and they haven't been able to capitalize on it. They haven't, like Montreal, they should have closed the game out of Montreal because they did two terrible goals. Do you know what I mean? Like, games just like that, even like LAFC just being so poor defensively there, going back to Saturday night against Cincinnati, conceding those two really poor goals. Like, as I keep alluding to, on paper, the Union should be probably about where they are at the moment. Like, they should be up and around competing for that top spot in the Eastern Conference. But
I mean, they are. If you win a game, you're tied for second.
Exactly. But it's just like,
It doesn't feel like it though. But go ahead.
Perhaps that's just the standards that this team has set over the last few years. You know, they've always been, you know, first or second, and perhaps we are. I don't know. I mean, again, perhaps we are being spoiled with how good this, with how good we've had it since, since the COVID year, and you know, with the support shield, that good run in the MLS's back cup tournament. Perhaps we have been spoiled, but I think again, but that the expectations are high. But I think having seen what this team can achieve, what this team can do, the expectations should be high. Like, as you sort of alluded to, Andre Blake's the best goalkeeper in the MLS. Jacob Glesner was the best player in best player in his position last season at centre half. Yeah. Kai Vakken's the best left back in the MLS. Jose Martinez is one of the best sixers in the MLS. Giles Dags has been one of the most consistent attacking threats in the league since he joined the Union.
Well, was it? I think him and Acosta both have double-digit goals and assists, and I think that's it. So, I mean, the numbers are there, but go ahead.
But like, as you said, the numbers are there, but like, you just look at the drop-off from last season. Again, as we mentioned, Glasner has been so well, being the best player in the position. Like, Andre has been struggling with some injury issues. He's been in and out a bit. Kai Wagner, again, he's still a great player, but his delivery and set pieces haven't been very good this year. As we sort of alluded to, I think he had like 13 or 14 assists in the league. It's about three this season. Like, but again, like, it's not just a case of like him putting in set pieces, free kicks and corners, and we're not creating chances. They're not just end up in goals, but he's not creating chances. He's struggling to beat the first man at times. His set pieces, like, going straight into the hands of the goalkeeper, which haven't been as threatening, and even his crossing hasn't been as threatening this year. Like, he's perhaps dropped down an edge.
Defensively, they're pretty good against set pieces. I remember, I think Danny said they're one of the best in the league in terms of goals against set pieces. Also, I feel like we haven't really highlighted this enough. I know I had mentioned earlier in the year that I thought this player was going to have a breakout season, if not a good season. Olivier hasn't been what we thought he was going to be this year.
No.
Neither. I mean, Nathan Harrell, I think, has proven to be a better offensive weapon at times off the set pieces for sure compared to Olivier. But I had said I want Olivier to somewhat match the assist total that Kai Wagner can put out. So that way, I'm not saying he has to get 20 assists. I'm saying, like, if he could get 5 or 6 assists this year, at least it has some promise that they can score from the right side. But Olivier really hasn't done anything that's impressed me overall. And I think that just limits the team's growth, because you're asking for all these players to have career years again, but he's not taken his chance to have his career year, which is what the Union could really use. It could really use Olivier to step up and improve his game. But go ahead.
So said again, I think Olivier was probably like, look, when he broke into the team two and a half years ago, he was such a great threat going forward, getting beyond his man, putting a cross into the box. Now, it's a question, I don't know if it'd be a unpopular question or even a point. Did this team peak last season?
It certainly feels like it. I mean, and granted, the injuries don't help either. I mean, it's hard to play the guys when you know Daniel has some sort of knee issue right now. Michael Uwa feels like he limps off the field every other game. I mean, he did on Saturday. These players are banged up too. So yeah, you could argue that they peaked last year. Now they're on the decline, but you also have to factor in everything else that comes into it.
But it's just like the mistake, and just also, but then you look at like the early season stuff as well, like the mistakes the team was making. Like, you just didn't see that last year. Like, you didn't see some of the sloppiness of this team had possessed at times, like looking at some of the games, like the 2-0 loss in Miami.
I want to read this comment. But Sean says, if you want to use a foot on off the gas analogy with this team, this car's missing some parts. That's a good point. You can put it on the gas all you want. It just is missing a tire or two.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Go ahead, Dave.
But like, again, it just feels again, like, you weren't getting this last season. Like, perhaps we are really spoiled for how good this team is. You know, for how good this team is, but like, look at the stretch of games. Of course, like, to start the season. You beat Columbus, you lose away at Miami, you just about scrape a home win against Chicago, lose in Montreal, lose at home to Orlando, draw a game you should be winning against Sporting Kansas City, draw in Chicago. Like
that Kansas City game that we drew early on was terrible.
Yeah,
I mean, that was one of their worst performances all year. And the weather was terrible, too. I think that was a storm game, if I remember correctly. But go ahead.
It's like, even again, like it seems like DC United, where they have had their number, like, again, you're expecting DC United to come up more, but just to be, of course, I know William Rooney said they outplayed the Union. I wouldn't say they outplayed them, but DC United were definitely the better team when they came to Subaru Park.
You could argue that DC United, in the recent game that we beat them on, what was it? I can't remember the date now. It was the 26th of August. The Union won 3-1. Okay.
Yeah.
The score is misleading for how the game actually went. It was a poor mistake early on. They made it 1-0. Then you had a penalty kick from it was a nice ball to Julian in the box. It was well set up. They still gave up a penalty kick because Miller took out Carranza. But DC United, after Martinez left the match, was the better team. And they should have scored 2 goals at least. I could have easily seen that game be 3-2. And then instead of saying, hey, beat them 3-1, we kicked their ass, it's our house in D.C., you would say, wow, they barely scraped by against a team that you had a 2-0 lead on. That's what should have been the story. They just didn't finish their goals. That's besides the point. But I look at it from a different perspective, maybe. Maybe I'm just negative. I don't know. But if you want to look at the Charlotte match real quick, again, from before the earlier in the season, Dave. So when we played against Charlotte back in April, no, back in May, I'm sorry, back in May. Here's the lineup we went with. It was a 1-0 win. It was an own goal by Kalina in the 70th minute. Remember, we thought Gazdag had scored open play, but it was an own goal. The lineup you went with was Carranza, Ua, Gazdag. You went 3 in the back with Lowe, Ellie, Glessens, and then the 4 in front of them was Wagner, Flock, Martinez, and Olivier. And that was when your boy, Leon Flock, was really coming into his own because him and Martinez were doing very well together. In that double pivot in front of the back three. And then, unfortunately, Flocks had some recent injuries. The subs that match were Nathan Harrell for Gazdag, Bueno for Carranza, Donovan for Ua. So, knowing that Flock is not there, knowing Martinez is not there, most likely, knowing that Elliott is not there, you're probably going to go Olivier, as we said earlier, McGlynn, Bueno, and Bedoya. That would be what makes the most sense. But go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that again. That probably is the most likely scenario with the four at the back. I completely forgot Elliot been sent off for stupid, stupid yellow card. But I was just thinking, looking at late earlier games in the season, right? Road games. I genuinely feel like one of the best performances this team has had this season was the road game in San Jose, where they lost. Yeah. But like everything they did, they just couldn't score. Like they had the better possession, they had like 20 odd shots on goal. Like. Again, like we know that they can put in these sort of road performances, and it's just sort of we need one of those games where, you know, of course, don't lose 2-1, but you want one of those games where they can have quite an abundance of chances and take a few of them and, you know, win 2-0, 3-1 on the road or something and get people back to believing again. Because again, like you can't, especially with this run that we alluded to last week. I mean, LAFC is going to be tough on Saturday night. The Dallas game is going to be. Dallas game, you're hoping they win, then you've got to go to Columbus where they always play you tough in Columbus. So again, like, you've got a very, very tough stretch of games where coming up, even like the Atlanta game earlier in the year as well, we sort of alluded to, like, again, like the struggles of the team. That was just a terrible performance of minute 1 to minute 90 where the Union didn't create anything all game. Like, you've got teams here who have had the better coming up where they've had the better of the Union this season, and it's now a big opportunity for the Union to perhaps show that they are on that show the level that they should be at and where they want to be at, and to show that, you know, perhaps they were just lapses in concentration or just off days. Like, as you sort of alluded to, that Cincinnati game where the Union essentially sort of half played their B team, so I think they had the CONCACAF Champions League game that same week.
And they didn't play poorly against Cincinnati that match, considering the changes around there. Eric says, when do we get rid of Jim? Well, unfortunately, he has a contract extension, so you're not at least for 2 years. But to Eric's point, this is a point that we should think about now. It's way well in advance. Is Curtin leaving this year, next year? No. He's going to finish his contract out. He's been here long enough. He deserves to finish that out. But the problem is, if they do not win anything this year, and they fail to improve next year, he doesn't come back. I don't think you can bring him back.
Yeah.
Eventually, you have to win. Eventually, you don't want to have Andy Reid repeated again in Philadelphia. So probably another year and a half, Eric. But that depends on what Tanner does as well.
I think that's an issue you sort of alluded to with Tanner. Like, we look at the off-season acquisitions that this team made, with Torres and Pereira probably being the two more established players, which everyone's like, oh, these are going to be good players. Like, Jim Clay didn't want them because they both barely played at all this season. Like, perhaps Jim, for the team to actually take a step forward and be more, perhaps be a bit more consistent and being able to maintain the levels that they've set up, mate, perhaps Jim should have more of a say in the boardroom when it comes to signing players or
re-signing players. To Frank's point, yeah. Look at the loss of Burke. How significant was that loss of Burke? Because, I mean, listen, Baribo looks really good right now, but it's September 18th and we haven't seen him produce yet. Quinn Sullivan doesn't produce offensively. Chris Donovan produces few and far between. And think about how much different this year could be with Corey Burke. Yeah. Go ahead to your point.
As you sort of said, as Frank mentioned, to like the bench quality and the bench, like the depth on the bench, like it's got players on there that Jim didn't even, well, early in the season, had players that Jim didn't even want in the squad with Pereira and Torres. Perhaps Jim should be given more of a voice in the transfer meetings and when actually signing players, because we won't get repeats of, you know, signing three players and only one of them actually gets any meaningful minutes throughout the season. Because, like,
I mean, this wouldn't fly on other teams. Think of it this way, Dave. Look at it from a different sport perspective. Let's say the 76ers brought in three bench players to play, and Doc Rivers never played them, or Nick Nurse never played them. If you look at the Eagles, let's say what was the big Eagles acquisition this year? Swift, right?
Yeah.
If Swift came into the game, to league, and we didn't play him at all, people would be saying, well, why isn't Swift playing? There would be more calls for the coaches to play the players that were brought in.
Yeah.
Because clearly they're talented. Clearly they have some sort of use. Now, Torres, maybe not. Maybe Torres is the exception to that. Pereira, as Jose and you and I have gone back and forth now the last year, is an anomaly that we'll never understand. The same thing with Dava. We'll never understand why he never played. And then Eric mentions another Jim mess up. Look how long it took Jim to replace CJ with Burke. That doesn't fall back on Jim necessarily.
Yeah, it depends.
It also falls back on Tanner and the fact that Sergio Santos was around the mix as well. But go ahead, Dave.
I think, again, that, like, that, as you sort of alluded to, that then becomes an issue in itself, obviously, with, as you sort of, like, Jim, perhaps, I mean, as you sort of alluded to just then, I don't know when Corey Burke came in, but, like, when the CJ Sapong sort of Corey Burke sort of transition happened, but, like, again, like, Jim needs more of a say on what he can do in the transfer. And clearly, like, if Tanner's there, like, oh, I want to sign Torres, I want to sign Pereira, and Jim's like, yeah, they're not really my sort of players. They aren't players I've not been a fan of when I've seen them and I've looked at them scouting. And Ernest goes, well, we'll sign them anyway, so you have to make use of it. Like, Jim's just not going to use them, is he? Just quickly with Sean's comment there in the chat, being pretty, but it's an issue with both, perhaps, like. Mm-hmm. Issue with both, perhaps, with the front office perhaps needing to be more transparent with Jim. Maybe that is something there, because again, you don't, like, we see in the, you know, in the NFL and things like that, like, usually coaches are somewhat consulted with players and they're brought in, like, you look at players to, like, fit a system, and whether, you know, we've seen it before with Jim with certain players where, you know, they've been brought in and they just haven't been utilized. Dalvo, Torres has barely been utilized. Like, in fact, he was the main reason they actually end up beating Querétaro in normal time.
It was
going to penalties. Like, and again, he was just completely shunted to the back of the line after probably being the best player on the pitch when he came on against Querétaro. He's been shoved to the back of the line again. It's like, well, clearly a player that Jim doesn't want or like, if they're not getting the opportunities. Like, does Jim either A, need more voice in the scouting department, in the transfer room, when signing players and go, actually, this is, I want this target as opposed to this target, and then Tanner goes out and does that job? Or B, does he need to be a bit more loose with, you know, with his squad rotation and being willing to change things up to help other players get involved, or, you know, to rotate the squad?
And that goes, and that can also go to the assistant coaches and saying, hey, who's talking to Jim as he's making these lineups? Who is consulting him during the game saying, hey, we need a sub? We, you know, how about this idea? What's a conversation like when it comes to managing a game? Like, for example, Andy Reid, right? Because I feel like I compare Jim to Andy Reid a lot now, and I don't mean to. It just I feel like their careers as coaches seem to kind of mirror each other a bit. But how many times did we see Andy have 15 plays that he was set with to start a game? And it would work great or wouldn't, whatever, he would just kind of force it. And then how many times did you see him get away from the run? How many times did we see we were calling for Westbrook to run the ball and he just didn't? And at one point you think, why isn't some coach yelling in his ear, you have to run the ball? I mean, look at what happened with the Eagles on Thursday night. On Thursday night, the Eagles tried to get cute early on. It was not working at all. And they realized, hey, if I run the ball, I can just run it down their throat and I can win this game by running the ball. And that's what happened. It sometimes feels like if it's Jim or the coaching staff, they have the set plan and they don't adjust accordingly after the fact, which is what we saw against Atlanta when they had that crappy lineup. It's even what we saw. I had somebody comment on Facebook on my article, and they said, when the second half opened up, why didn't they just go to the diamond and kind of be a little bit more defensive when you're up 2-0? Now, do I agree with that 100%? Not necessarily, but the point being is you could have made some adjustments at the half to ensure that what happened in the second half didn't happen. So Frank's comment real quick. With all the games played already, the lack of bench quality and playoff platform, best of three, the Union will struggle, in my opinion. While the starters are top class, I think they will be gassed, which is a great point. And it's not just the Union, Frank, or everybody who's listening. It's not just the Union. For all these players who have made deep runs in League Cup, who are making deep runs in Open Cup, to then play a best out of three in November, October, it's freezing out, it's not going to be any easier. You're going to see other teams having these issues, and it's just poor for the game. It's just not good for the game. It's the same reason why the NFL is now having the conversation about getting the turf off these fields. It's the same reason why they got rid of that third preseason game. It just, you have to eventually think of the product that you're putting out there. Ultimately, this is not just a game. This is entertainment, and you want to be entertained with the best possible players at the fullest capacity. And right now, MLS is possibly run into the issue of they're going to get to November and half of these players are going to be exhausted.
But again, it's, you know, League's Cup and the new ridiculous player format where honestly it probably would be laughed at if you told someone about it anywhere else. You know, you have playing games, and then when you have playing games, you have a best of three series to open things up as well, which you'd be laughed at. It just is, again, it's not great for the growth of the game. And you sort of have to look at it and think, does the whole process of the League's Cup and, you know, this whole stupid new playoff system, has that been an Apple influence? Is that something that Apple has influenced to, you know, perhaps make their content feel more valued than it is? Like, because again, like, great, you're shunting in more games into a season, like, that's great, but you still haven't even, you know, fixed the way that your app and website works properly, where you the games don't get spoiled. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I fell asleep during the at that half time with the MLS Cup. And I was like, I think it was obviously 1-0. And I thought, okay, I'll watch the second half now and, you know, see what happened. But the first thing I see when I go on the website is Messi lifting the trophy. It's like, well, okay, then I'm not going to bother watching it because I know what happened. I'll watch the highlights or whatever, or go on YouTube and watch it instead. I use another platform to like see what happened because I'm not going to sit there and watch the full rest of the game now that I know. Like, but again, like, it's just, again, like, it's just a very, very frustrating sort of system that's coming up. And again, as you sort of said, like, you can't imagine winning 6-0 in, like, your first game of the playoffs at home and then going on to lose the next two. Like, you'd feel so wronged in the fact, just, you know, like,
go ahead.
Sorry, you feel so wrong. Like, imagine winning like 6-0 and then you're like, still somehow get eliminated in the next two games. Like, it was just ridiculous.
It devalues the regular season. That's a problem. The new playoff picture devalues the regular season to the point where you can take games off because, you know, 9 out of the 13 teams make it and they're all within striking distance. In reality, in the East, only Toronto's really out of it. I mean, Miami can still probably make a push just because they have Messi, but it just devalues the games. And even now, the League's Cup and Open Cup, you can argue Open Cup, it devalues the regular season a little bit. Whereas last year, at least you knew half of them you're not going to make it, and it's going to be better overall for the product. Eric says, this is why Man City wins. Their bench is deep with talent. Our bench has Bedoya, who couldn't last 20 minutes, let alone 90. And then Eric says Champions League. Now, I like Champions League because it is very invitational, kind of like it does have the Club World Cup after that. Leagues Cup, I liked it, but after I see it now, after the Union have played recently, I'm like, I could have done without it. I would have rather seen the MLS season continue, get done in September, October, and then November, like we saw last year, and call it a freaking day. But that's, I think we can go on this topic forever, because I think a lot of people have strong opinions on how the league is currently set up. I don't like the way it's set up right now. I thought it was better last year, but so be it. So, Dave, before we end the show, let's do some score predictions here. What do you think and Charlotte on Wednesday night?
Probably go for another 1-1 draw, to be honest. I think
just keep it consistent.
I think a 1-1 draw. I'll go with Gazdag goal.
Open play, or are we going PK?
I think the thing is that it's a ridiculous stat. I think Gazdag scored like 11 like penalties this year, or whatever. Like, what a ridiculous stat! Like, the fact the Union have had so many penalties this season, like. Not many teams actually get like 12 penalties in a season, which is ridiculous. But I imagine like he probably would be a penalty again. Like Gazdag has been, in terms of like scoring this year, has been very, very ineffective in that regard. So I'm probably got a penalty in a 1-1 draw.
1-1 draw. Melissa says a draw. Really, we're not very optimistic tonight, Melissa. No, maybe on Thursday we'll feel better, but tonight not so much.
Hey, Denny's. As I say, cheers, Derek. But hey, this team needs to show us that we can be confident in them to close games out. Like, hey, they come out of that Cincinnati game with a 2-0 win or 2-1 win. I think, okay, hell yeah, massive win. But I think Jose said to said in our group chat on Sunday, if what's his name, if Acosta would play in that game, the Union would 100% lose in that game.
100% Acosta would just destroyed us. You're right.
Like, especially the way they played in the second half. Like the fact that the team allowed two players just to walk straight through the middle of the defense, mm-hmm. and you know, have a 2-1 situation was just shambolic, really. But yeah,
you want to do a prediction for LAFC, or do you want to hold off on that? We haven't really touched on that. There's a lot. The problem with the LAFC match being on Saturday and not knowing Martinez's health and not knowing the lineup yet, that's why we don't always predict two games ahead. But just for the hell of it, why not? I'm in a good mood tonight. Why not give us a prediction for LAFC?
The LAFC game, I'm gonna go, I think they'll go the back five against LAFC with Elliot coming back. Eric's comment as well, I think on Wednesday they will go with the back five. I think there will be the diamond for the back four of the diamond on Wednesday against Charlotte due to Jack being suspended. But I could easily see them going with the back five against
LAFC,
yeah.
So last time we played LAFC at home, just for the hell of it, it was a 1-1 draw. It was in the was when LAFC scored in the death with Acosta after the turnover by Jack Elliott. Jack Elliott just seems to struggle against LAFC, I guess. That's not fair to him. He did score two goals, so that's not fair to him. The Union lineup that night was Ua, Carranza, Gazdag, Martinez, McGlynn, Bedoya, Wagner, Elliott, Glessens, Mambiso, and Blake and Nett. So it was the diamond. It was people who are currently healthy and on the roster. So it could be the same thing again at home. They could go the same exact diamond formation, and it did work. They just couldn't close the game out. For myself, against Charlotte, I'm gonna go with Melissa. I'm going to side some optimism here. I'm going to go with 2-0. They're going to turn the season around on Wednesday, get some momentum into home. I do think Cincinnati might be looking ahead, or Charlotte might be looking ahead at Cincinnati a bit too on Saturday. Maybe they can't close out at home. 2-0 against Charlotte on Wednesday. LA, we're going to draw 1-1. I think it's going to be, I don't think LA is going to walk out of here with a loss, unfortunately. Yeah. But that is across the pitch. I'm going to read the sponsors, and we'll do a final thought real quick. A lot less sponsors now, which is nice. Allstate Insurance Agency, Deborah Sigler at 6750 Iroquois Trail number 3 in Allentown, PA. Specializing in insurance for auto, home, renters, life, and much more. Give her a quote today from her by calling 610-395-6100. We have Vinny's Pizza Restaurant. Discover a new favorite by trying their pizzas top pizzas in Allentown, plus pasta, salads, calzones, sandwiches, and more. Check out their menu at vinny'spizzarestaurant.com. We have Stuff to the Grills, offering a unique twist on a traditional sandwich shop. They have homemade hot and cold sandwiches, salads, appetizers, and baked goods available for all events at stufftothegrills.com. You have Manscaped. Get 20% off by using the code AATSports at manscaped.com. And your Philly Sports Trip, join us in New York or Washington. Secure your spot at phillysportstrip.com and select Allentown Pickup at checkout. Dave, your final thought before a very busy week for you. And Gillingham won in a great game on Saturdays. But go ahead.
Final thought. So for me, I think this week is a massive week. I think, you know, two games. You know, obviously, the team's playing its game in hand now to get back with. We'll catch up with, you know, the other teams around them that have played 28 games this year, I want to say.
Yeah, 28
games. Yeah, 28 games this year. So, yeah, like it's. You know, it'd be a massive opportunity if the team could win and get up to 50 points. At the moment, I just don't see it happening. A draw, though, I think it takes them up to second. Again, like, there's so much to play for. I think, you know, with Decker finishes low at six, so I think a win would be massive for them. But again, it's just a massive stretch of the season now where, as I said at the start of the show, we need to start, you know, not just picking up the results, but also picking up some star points along the way and starting to show, like, that you can be a threat in this playoffs. But again, as this team has shown on their own this season with its inconsistencies, whether when they get it or not is a different story.
That's a great point. First of all, thank you, everybody. Commented a lot of new comments, old comments. Appreciate everybody chiming in. For those who were very curious, this is a Rashawn Holmes t-shirt. He last played with the Sixers for 2018. I loved Rashawn Holmes. Besides that, Melissa says, great discussion. Thanks, Melissa. For myself, I agree with what Jillian said last week, jokingly, but I do agree. I'm still waiting for this team to throttle opponents. So to your point, David, this is a big week. The Union could very well fall down the table in the next two matches, or they could very well cement themselves as a legitimate contender.
Yeah.
Which team we see by Sunday morning, we'll find out. But otherwise, this is Across the Pitch. He's Dave Miller, Dave GFC Miller. He also covers Gillingham for League 2. So follow him on Facebook, Twitter for all that fun stuff. I'm Mike Barrera, mbarrera1323 on Twitter as well as on TikTok. If you follow me on Facebook, you know that my name is not Mike Barrera on Facebook, and I don't typically release it. But on the Union page, you guys see all there on that. Otherwise, guys, have a great Monday night. Dupe.
The Union dupe.